honor to serve as pastor here and also the privilege of bringing the main message, which we teach and preach out of God's Word, the Bible. So welcome. So glad you're here. Look forward to getting better acquainted with each and every one of you if we still have the opportunity. It's probably true that every generation looks at what's happening in their world and they think this is the worst it's ever been. You ever wondered that? If every generation looks around and thinks it couldn't be worse? And I watched the documentary on the American Revolution and I thought for sure that was the worst time in history to be alive with what was happening. And then the next generation says, no, my generation is the worst to be alive. And then we finally find out in our generation what's happening around the world, and we say, there couldn't be a worse generation. But to be alive, I mean such horrible things happening in the world. It's quite likely that every generation feels that. Moral darkness, the world is overrun with relational darkness. The emotional darkness and spiritual darkness in the world. And if you pay any attention, there's things that capture your attention around the world that are seemingly unbearable darkness. The abuses that are affecting our world today, the widespread terrorizing and killing of innocent people, the displacement and starvation of those people. Civilians who are find themselves innocently involved or in the way of a major armed conflict, ones that are happening in places like the Sudan, where millions of people have lost their lives, lost their homes, lost their villages, lost their access to food and water and shelter and medical care and so on. And if you pay attention, you think to yourself, what horrendous darkness that is. And on top of that, the continued global exploitation of the vulnerable. People that get used, abused, and exploited through human trafficking and all the different ways that that happens to force labor, sexual exploitation, and violence that is occurring around the world in which millions of adults and minors as well are coerced, bought, sold, exchanged, trapped in terribly abusive situations, all for profit, all so somebody can make money. And the whole human race, whether we know it or not, the entire human race is searching for healing in the world. Certainly those who are trapped in abuses and exploitation are praying for, are desperately longing for deliverance from that horrific darkness and meaning in life. And the whole human race is needing and pursuing forgiveness and peace and hope. And when you look at the Gospel of John doesn't begin telling us what we should do about the darkness. In the Gospel of John, it doesn't begin by telling us what we should do about the darkness. Gospel of John doesn't say, get involved in these causes in the world. The Gospel of John doesn't say, adopt these political policies or these governance policies or these moral policies. The Gospel of John doesn't help us kind of figure out what party we're going to join and support. The Gospel of John begins by introducing us to the one who entered the darkness. That's the starting point. We get introduced to who it is who comes into all of that abuse and exploitation and horrific, black, painful darkness. And we discover this in the Gospel of John, that Jesus is God's answer to humanity's darkness. One of the most remarkable properties of light is that it has no power on its own. It's, one of the most, the properties of darkness is that it has no power on its own. Darkness is just the absence of light. That's all it is, simply the absence of light. Darkness has never, in the history of science, has never overcome or defeated the light. If you ever think about how incredible it is that there can be a pitch black cave that is locked away, unseen and unknown, and inside that cave, someone can get near enough to see that it's pitch black. And all it takes to dispel that darkness is a little candle. And all that darkness disappears like that. Just a little candle, a little flame, and off it goes. It lights up an entire pitch black cave. And also, keep in mind, the darker the cave, the more noticeable a little light becomes. Show of hands. Have you, and I'll make sure I'll add this so that you don't have to reveal yourself, or your child ever been, a period of time in their life, have you or your child ever been afraid of the dark? Do you remember that? Show of hands, where are you? A good portion of people are afraid of the dark. Now let me ask you another question. How many of you or your kid, your children, have ever been afraid of the light when you were little? One person. I like the odds. I like the odds. I want you to pay attention to that. Instinctively, our little human souls, before we know anything, we know that when we're in the dark, something's wrong. Something's wrong. I did not raise a single child who said, please turn the lights off, make sure it's pitch black, because those lights freak me out. I can't sleep. I can't breathe. I don't know what to expect. I don't want to be alone in the light. Somehow in our bones, somehow right in our blood, we have an aversion to the darkness. And we have a drawing to the light. John's gospel opens entirely different from the other gospels, Matthew and Luke. There's no manger. There's no shepherds. There's no wise men. Instead, John takes us back before Bethlehem. He takes us back before Abraham. He takes us before the creation of human life. Before, into Genesis chapter 1, John starts with this: the Word already existed. And God wants us to comprehend that Jesus isn't simply another teacher. He's just not a better version of prophet. That he is the eternal Son of God, who stepped into our darkness willingly to bring life to all this death. And he brings life to all this death that's currently happening around the world. Look how John starts his gospel. In the beginning. In the beginning. Recognize that phrase? In the beginning. The Word already existed. The Word was with God, and the Word was God. He existed in the beginning with God. God created everything through Him. And nothing was created except through Him. The Word gave life to everything that was created. And His life brought light to everyone. The light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish it. God sent a man, John the Baptist, to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of his testimony. John himself was not the light. He was simply a witness to tell about the light. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. This is what we're going to focus on this month, the practice of the way of Jesus, the practice of witness. And what we mean by this is showing and sharing the good news of Jesus so others see and hear His way right through our lives. And the starting point is here, that God sent His pre-existing light to overcome the darkness. There's a light. It isn't new. It wasn't an idea after the fact that there is a pre-existing person who is the Son of God, who is eternal, who was there during creation. He pre-existed, and the scriptures say he was light, and he was already there. And that light was sent to overcome the darkness. Now, you'll notice that John, the gospel author, he purposely echoes Genesis chapter 1. Just as creation began with the spoken word, new creation begins with God's living word. And remember that John 1 said that the word was with God, the word was God, and everything was created through him. Life itself comes from God. Life itself. Then John makes this extraordinary statement. He says, his life brought light to everyone. Throughout Scripture, light represents God's presence, God's truth, God's holiness, and our salvation. In other words, without Jesus, humanity remains. Humanity, as in all of the human race, remains spiritually blind. Not mattering if you are following wise old prophets. It has completely separate from whether or not you're following another world religion or a guru or some kind of religious, an epic religious leader. Outside of, beyond, apart from Jesus, there is spiritual blindness. And when there's spiritual blindness, here's the traits: wandering, lost, afraid, vulnerable. And when we think about the practice of witness, that apprentices are practicing witness, when you think about the practice of witness, it starts with worship. Before we can tell others about Jesus, we continually need to be reminded ourselves, we need to be reminded who he truly is, who it is that we are witnessing about. We're not inviting people to adopt higher moral standards. When we, quote unquote, witness, we're not inviting people to adopt healthier habits or even more positive thinking. We're introducing someone to the Creator who has entered this dark creation in order to rescue it. This is so, so crucial for remaining hopeful. The light shines in the darkness, and no matter how bad it looks around the world, no matter how despairing it can feel, no matter how hopeless, no matter how hard it is to understand the chaos and the hurt and the death that's happening around the world, the light shines in the darkness, and the darkness can never extinguish the light. That ugliness, that pitch black darkness around the world will never, ever extinguish the light of Jesus that God has sent to exist among the darkness. His light shining in and overcoming the darkness, one of the most hope-filled verses in all of Scripture. Notice the verb here, light shines. That's present tense. It doesn't say the light shone in the darkness. Uh-oh, that's in the past. It doesn't say the light will shine in the darkness. Well, I can't wait till the light starts shining in the darkness. The light is still shining today despite the darkness. The darkness could not overcome Jesus at his birth. The darkness could not overcome Jesus through temptation. The darkness couldn't overcome Jesus through his rejection from those who he trusted. And the darkness could not overcome Jesus at a cross, execution cross. And don't forget, even a cold, dark death couldn't overcome the light of Jesus. Could not overcome him. So, this light that shines in the darkness, and the same light that darkness can never extinguish, the darkness still can't extinguish his light. And of course, we know that it doesn't mean that the darkness isn't real. It doesn't mean that the darkness doesn't still exist somewhere. But God never minimizes sin. He never minimizes suffering. He never minimizes unbelief. All of that is real. But none of those, this is so important, none of those remain in the end. In the end, the light fully and finally overcomes the dark. None of those things remain. There is no remaining sin. There's no remaining suffering. There's no remaining unbelief. And many believers, very regular, everyday, sincere believers, feel so discouraged by the culture that is so increasingly dark, the hardships that are so increasingly dark. But God reminds us, and I'm thrilled to remind you, that darkness is never the main character in God's story. Darkness is not the main character in the human story. The light of Jesus is the main character in God's story. And Jesus is, and He will eventually make all death and darkness come untrue. It's important for us to keep this in mind. In light of this, our church doesn't create light. We don't have to get ourselves out in the world and work up enough energy to shine brightly. We're not trying to generate our own light in the darkness. All we do is carry the light that already shines. All we do is reflect the light that it's already eternal. And this changes how we witness. This changes how we appear representing God in the world. We don't witness from fear, we witness from victory. So, how does God expect the light to spread? How does He expect these little candles to get into the darkness around the world? God sent an ordinary person to radiate His extraordinary light. God has the extraordinary light, and He doesn't choose extraordinary people, thank God. He sends ordinary people. Suddenly, I remember hearing from missionaries, and the missionaries would get up on a Sunday morning like we've had recently, and they would talk about where they're going and how they lived, and they talk about these stories that made me think of like a sanctified Indiana Jones that are like, you know, whipping the bad guys in the village and running through tunnels and overcoming all kinds of things. I'd be like, those people are like special forces. I could never be like that. And here's my implication. What I kind of owned a little bit on my own is I could never be a witness like that around the world or anywhere else. These people are special. And then I read the Bible and I look at who He uses and I look at who He relies on. I look at who He sends into these different cities and cultures and whatever. And I think, they're not very special. They're pretty kind of ordinary. And sometimes I like to look at how knuckleheaded they are and I feel so much better about myself. And I think they're ordinary. The author of John introduces another John, John the Baptist, who is certainly ordinary in some ways and in very, very different in other ways. God sent a man. How does this light move? How does this candlelight get into a dark cave? God sent a man. Four simple, beautiful words. Don't forget, God could have announced Jesus over and over and over again with an angel of light. The angels alone could have taken that job of being His witness and advancing and announcing this light. Instead, He sent a person, an ordinary human being. And here's John's purpose. It was very clear to tell about the light so that everyone might believe because of His testimony, because of His story, because of what He was saying, because of what He was experiencing. Notice two important truths about the practice of witness. It's God's idea. God had the idea that He would be sending a man. His idea, not our idea. It's not a strategy of the church or the strategy of the Christian faith to say, we're going to send people. God's idea. He's the one who invented that approach. And also, we see, secondly, the purpose of sending. It isn't to create light, it's to reflect the light of Jesus. And we have three more Sunday messages to kind of walk through and talk through. What does that look like to be sent people? But every apprentice who is joined to Jesus, their master, and who's learning from Jesus, must remember that John the Baptist himself was not the light. He himself was reflecting the light of Jesus. John never tried to become the hero in his own story. He never tried to become the hero in the story of their culture and the story of formation and transformation. He simply reflected beyond himself. I came across a quote one time when I was studying to become a church leader, and I came across a quote one time that I thought, this is worth remembering and has helped me every day since. And it goes like this: the sin of the clergy caught my attention. Okay, if I'm headed for what would be known as the category of adult life called clergy, the sin of the clergy, what's the sin of the clergy? Here's what this author said: to cultivate a dependence upon oneself. Now, it's hopeful and likely that the clergy isn't out among the world doing these dynamic, destructive sins that are hurting their life and other people's lives. So what is the sin of the clergy? What if the sin of the clergy at the core is slowly coaxing and convincing and building more than trust, but eventually building a dependency on oneself? Why is that a sin? To the degree in which a clergy is building dependence upon oneself, to the degree which they are sabotaging someone's dependence on Jesus. So easy to do. So easy to do. That's our purpose too. People don't ultimately need, I know this is going to rattle some of us. People ultimately don't need our opinions. They don't need our convictions. They don't need our policies to bring transformation to their life and heart. They don't need our advice. I would go so far as to say they don't even really need our kindness. They need our Jesus. They need our Jesus. Their life doesn't experience the kind of transformation that we've experienced apart from Jesus. They don't need a better program. They don't necessarily need a better church. They don't. All of these things can help somebody, but ultimately for transformation that's in the heart, that has any meaningful fruitfulness and flourishing and belonging to God forever, they need Jesus. You tell about the light. This is why he sent a man, to tell about the light. You tell about the light every day. Because I think for most of us, we're kind of like, I'm kind of shy. I'm not sure I'm telling about the light all that much. John the Baptist was bold. He got in people's faces. It cost him his head, life. He was bold. He was noticeable. His light was very, very vivid. And I think a lot of us are kind of like, I kind of do it different. I approach things different. Don't really want to be the main focus or whatever. But let me remind you, you tell about the light every single time you care selflessly for anyone. Your aging parent. Your ungrateful, maybe even unknowing family member. Every time you encourage a discouraged coworker, you tell about his light. Every time you invite a teammate, a colleague, a neighbor to join you among the church family on a Sunday morning, you're telling about the light of Jesus. Every time you pray with someone who's hurting, you don't necessarily know all of it, but you know they're hurting. When you pray with them, you're telling them about a light. Oh, and let's not forget this. Every time you forgive someone who hurt you, who doesn't deserve it, who hasn't asked for forgiveness, who may not even know that they've hurt you, every time you pray and ask God to help you forgive and ultimately begin to interact with that person in a way that demonstrates your healing, you tell about the light of Jesus, grace, forgiveness, loving someone who doesn't deserve it, loving the unlovable. And every time you get the opportunity to explain how and why Jesus alone gives you hope, every time you're telling about the light. And every one of these becomes another opportunity to make Jesus the hero of your story. Why do they need that? Well, God sent a person, every single person, the true light that they need. God sent every person the true light that they need. The one who is the true light, who gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. The definition of the word true here, genuine, ultimate, complete, whole. Many of our things that we experience in our culture promise light. They promise kind of like life, right? Things like health and wealth and success and material wealth, money, relationships, achievement, popularity, and religion even promises that you're going to experience life. Politics and self-improvement, all those things are promises. And even you go church to church, well-meaning, sincere churches are promising. If you're a part of our church, you're going to experience a different kind of life. And all of them may illuminate a part of the life for a season. But only Jesus, he's the only one who is the true light. Only Jesus reveals God perfectly. No church is going to do that. No religion is going to do that. Only Jesus exposes our sin without abandoning us. Only Jesus knows our sin deeply and intimately without abandoning us and condemning us. Everyone and everything else discovers who we really are, and they're out. Hey, cut out the negativity, get rid of those things and those people that make you unhappy. Jesus is the only one who offers forgiveness instead of condemnation for our failures and flaws. The only one of all of those. And ultimately, he's the only one that gives us the power to overcome death and spend eternity in heaven with him. There's no other power for that. And this is why your witness matters. People aren't merely missing information. They're missing the light himself. In their darkness, they're not wanting more. They're not needing more information. They're missing the light to bring, to overcome the own darkness that they're experiencing. So this morning, standing outside on my little stairwell, just before sunrise, still dark out, but then eventually the rays of the sun start to come up over the horizon. And I, like you, didn't hear the dark resisting. I didn't hear the darkness saying, not this time, sunlight. I didn't hear the darkness agonizing or arguing. You know what the dark did? As the sun came up, the dark just faded away. Helplessly, simply gives way and yields to the light. Out it goes. And that's our gospel story. Jesus entered our dark world, and his light still shines. His light still changes lives. His light is still bringing hope to those who believe there is no hope, those who are hopeless. And now, God graciously, here's what he does. God graciously says, come on in. I'm on mission. I am bringing light to the darkness around the world, and I'm inviting you to be a part of it. I'm inviting you to be a part of it so that you can shine brightly, the light of my pre-existing light, Jesus, in every single circle, every single person that I've brought around you. You can be that light. You can be do that reflecting. By his grace, God invites us into his own mission. Like John the Baptist, we're not the light. We don't save anyone. Our good advice doesn't transform anybody's heart, but we have the incredible privilege of radiating the one who's does, the one who does. So what do we do now? I mean, practically speaking, how can an ordinary apprentice participate in God's extraordinary mission, in the extraordinary mission that he's got that's global? What does this mean for the practice of witness? John gives us a simple pattern. He says, receive the light. That's where you start. You receive this light into your own dark, dead heart that doesn't know God, that's separated from God. You receive, you believe and receive that Jesus is God's light that dispels and overcomes the darkness of selfishness, pride, and self-righteousness in our own heart. Saving faith, it's called. I receive and believe Jesus. We'll remember that together today. Abide in Him. Practice His way. Let His life form yours. And when you think about letting His life form yours, I want to tell you about an opportunity coming up in the fall and invite you to join a formation group that are coming alive this fall through our church family. Join a formation group. And what you'll do is you'll get the opportunity to build a rule of life together and practice the way of Jesus with a community, not on your own. Stay tuned for how to do that, where you can kind of practice the way of Jesus in community, not in isolation, individually, on your own. Secondly, after receiving the light, reflect the light. It's kind of goes without saying, right? The practice of witness is not about becoming impressive or winsome. When we stay close to Jesus, we reflect His life. There is a natural reflection when you're close enough to Jesus. Your character becomes the visible evidence. Your loveliness, your lovingness becomes the visible evidence of Jesus' transforming work. People begin seeing, this is Jesus' humility I'm seeing. This is Jesus' patience. This is His His peace that I'm noticing. And they're noticing it through you. And then lastly, reveal the light. Reveal. You get the opportunity. Maybe every morning you pray something like, Father, help me to stay close to Jesus today. And as let your light just be shining through my own life, through my own words. Give me one opportunity to tell my story of transformation, how and why Jesus is so transformative in my life. When God opens the door, then you lovingly explain why your life is different because of this light. Our witness practice includes both showing and sharing. And we'll talk in detail about